back in town.
Brings on the volley! And what a goal!
Unbelievable piece of football.
It's Wes Morgan again! Body! As you like.
It's just nothing other than sublime.
Live on LCFC.com, Facebook and Twitter. You're listening to Extra Time on LCFC Radio.
Yes, hello and welcome to Extra Time here on LCFC Radio with me, Dan Bates, Matt Elliott and Leicester Mercury journalist Jordan Blackwell in the studio this evening. Good evening, gents. Firstly, Matt, you obviously had the weekend off, didn't you? Did you enjoy it?
I did indeed. I didn't enjoy the start of the weekend, though.
No, nobody
Friday
did.
Friday night didn't go as planned, as we all know. But other results pretty much went Leicester's way, didn't they? It went as well as you could possibly hope for. Put it that way. Unbelievable. One team in the top 11. I know three didn't play. One in the Premier League. Unbelievable. And it was much needed reprieve, I think, for Leicester as well, really, because just relaxes that pressure a touch, doesn't it?
Yeah, the weekend didn't start well for Leicester, but it certainly ended a lot better than what it could have done. Coming up on the show, we'll hear from Brendan Rodgers, Kelechi Iheanacho, Damari Gray and George Hurst. We'll preview the development squad. They're in action away at Southampton tonight. We'll, of course, preview the FA Cup game on Wednesday. But we will talk about the game on Friday. And Jordan, well, good evening as well, Jordan. You were obviously here for the press conference today ahead of that game on Wednesday. What were the standout bits, do you think, from that Brendan Rodgers press conference?
Well, Vardy's not yet available, I suppose, is the big sort of injury news. But I think there was he was quite clear, Brendan, on where he thinks it's not going quite right in terms of he wants to see that intensity back in Leicester's play that's perhaps been lacking during this past couple of months. So he was he was quite forthright about it, and hopefully that'll get through to the players and we'll see an upturn in form soon.
He looked relatively stern, but he was still in good spirits, wasn't he, as he has been all season?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think there is a sort of a calm positivity to him and to the squad, really. I think, you know, based on the position that they're in, I don't think there needs to be too much negativity despite, you know, Friday night's defeat. So, yes, I think there is still plenty of cause for optimism.
How disappointed, Matt, do you think you'll have been with Friday evening, as we all were?
Yeah, I think less so now after the round of results that pretty much went Leicester's way. But you know, it doesn't take away from the disappointment, one of the result, and the performance itself, really. And sometimes it's fine lines, isn't it? Yeah, because I think up until then, people were sort of not making excuses, but giving reasons why things were faltering a little bit or stuttering, you know, in terms of the amount of games. It's that stage of the season. Games tend to get a bit scrappy and, you know, they've had some big fixtures in a short space of time, etc., etc. But they had time to prepare for that, and it was almost like a run of quite difficult games were done and dusted. We got through them, not unscathed, but still in a good position. And then you go to Norwich, okay, away from home, but in the fighting for their lives, that proved to be the case. But the bottom of the league, all things said and done, even though they're a half-decent side, and Leicester were expected to go and win the game. And I wouldn't say they never really looked like doing that, but you know, to lose it was probably a little bit harsh. But when you're playing on such a tight rope like that, you know, as you were, such a fine line, anything could go against you, and it did. And all of a sudden, you know, that there was, even Brendan Rodgers mentioned in his post-match interview, didn't he? You know, listen, I can't avoid the issues that are happening. So that's the first time he's mentioned that publicly. Otherwise, it'd just been sort of ticking along reasonably nicely, hasn't it? So it shows you that he was aware that it was. I thought at the time it was quite a bad game to lose. There's never a good game to lose, but if you know what I mean, even more important than perhaps other times. And if results had gone differently, all of a sudden there's a pack who are getting closer and closer, not breathing down your neck. But now that pressure's sort of been alleviated to an extent with the results, and there's another opportunity to go again. So that would be a little bit of a weight off the shoulders, I think, now. And Aston Villa obviously have had their difficulties of late. Obviously, the Birmingham game to deal with first. But, you know, the league is the priority. But I just like to see him get that fire back in their belly. And Jordan mentioned that Brendan said in his press conference about the intensity. But that's in an all-round game, yeah. Not just in terms of how they play when they're in possession. Out of possession, I think it's evident that they're not closing down and hounding oppositions and forcing errors like they were so long ago. But, with that, collectively, they don't have that. And then little individuals just drop off their level a bit, and it has a collective impact, doesn't it? And they were strutting around. They were imposing themselves on oppositions, weren't they, 3-4 months ago. These days, they're a lot more tentative. They need to recapture that mentality and that aggression in their play.
It was interesting what Matt was saying there, particularly about Brendan mentioning in his post-match interview about the issues, and that it's the first time we've heard him say that type of thing in the media. Obviously, you sit in on pretty much every single one of his press conferences, so you'll know that he's highly intelligent, isn't he? And he knows what he wants to say to the media at times. So it's important or interesting that he's dropped that in now, just to almost give a bit of a wake-up call to the players, in a sense, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think Brendan's been he's been in the game for a while now. I know he's sort of relatively young in management terms, but he's been around the Premier League for a while. He's been in high-pressure jobs before, and he knows the right things to say, and he knows the kind of messages that he can give to the media that will get through to the players. So yes, I think him making those points that he's been fairly clear that it's Leicester aren't at the standard they were setting in the first half of the season, and I think he'll hope that message does get through to his players. And I think it will do. I think there's still I think we'll see a response over the coming weeks.
It's obviously frustrating for all of us to see this run of form at the moment and the disappointment around it. But you look still where Leicester are in the table. They did so much good work earlier on in the season, didn't they, that they've allowed themselves to have a few bad results like this.
Yeah, I think if the kind of the poor results had been spread out across the season, it wouldn't even be a talking point, if you like. I think it's just the fact that they've kind of come in a group together. But yes, I still think Brendan says it quite often, you will finish where you deserve to finish. And I suppose that with 28 games played, Leicester are where they deserve to be. They probably have been the third best team in the division up to this point. And I think that they will probably, fingers crossed, continue to be one of the, hopefully in the top four, best teams in the division by after 38 games.
Well, that's the thing. It was only a matter of months ago that they were winning 8 Premier League games. On the spin, let's get some reaction then from Brendan Rodgers and Kelechi Iheanacho after that game on Friday. This is them talking about the game and that controversial VAR incident.
Naturally disappointed. I don't think we deserve to lose the game. However, we didn't show enough quality in the final third of the pitch to make the breakthrough. You know, we had enough attempts on goal. You know, we had 19 shots, but only 4 on target. So that tells you that little bit of quality in the final third wasn't quite there. And then we are disappointed with the goal we concede.
Obviously, that wasn't enough from VAR, but I haven't watched the replay, and I thought he hit the defender's shoulder, but I wasn't sure he hit my hand. But if that's the rules, so there's nothing we can do about it. We just move on.
The VAR goal was disappointing because I felt we were deserving of that at that stage of the game. Not sure what the ruling is, but somehow it was disallowed, even though both players unintentionally handballed. It didn't work for us.
You're listening to Extra Time, live on LCFC Radio. Your place for all the reaction to the weekend's football.
As ever, if you're listening in on Facebook and on Twitter, do get your comments in this evening. Ian says, good evening. Not the result we wanted on Friday, but we were helped by other results, obviously, which is what you were saying earlier, Matt. And Alan says, stay together, you lot, as a fan base. Our lads need you to stay strong, which is an important message, I'm sure, as well. We heard there from Brendan Rodgers and Kelechi Iheanacho talking about the VAR incident. What was your opinion on it, Matt?
Well, the first thing that comes into mind really is the rule in itself, isn't it? As the rules stand, VAR got it right, I suppose. You know, it hit Kelechi's hand, although there was an angle or two that made it look like it didn't. It looked like it came off the defender and... who was the defender again?
Godfrey,
wasn't it? Yeah, Godfrey, and then it... Iheanacho's midriff and then bounce to him, but I don't know, perhaps that's a little bit hopeful. But anyway, it's just a ruling, isn't it? Now, how can someone, a defender, knock it with his arm onto the attacker's arm and you get pulled up for it? You know, that's just bizarre. I mean, at the very worst, if the rules were correct, it should have been taken back, should have been a Leicester free kick. You know, if it's handball, it's handball. But always... I'm not tags. Do we have to talk about it? Because you go one way or another, don't you? You go off at tangents. But it was so harsh. I didn't even consider it at first when the goal went in at normal time, at first viewing, and then the VAR sign comes up and you think, and then you have a look and you're like, straight away, you know, it's going to be ruled out, and there's nothing Kelechi could do about it. You know, that's what's even worse. They make these rules, which that one itself is just ludicrous, isn't it? You know, everyone collectively agrees that that should... I mean, I heard Ben Foster today, Watford goalkeeper, calling it criminal. You know, the players hate it. Everybody who watches football cannot understand it. You know, the imbalance of it. It's OK for a defender, but not an attacker. We're used to every minimal... detail is picked up when it goes back to the clear and obvious bit as well, doesn't it? And the unintentional bit as well. Handballs all used to be down as a ruling as intentional, although even that didn't work properly, did, because lots of penalties were given that weren't intentional but quite clearly struck the hand.
But now we're not seeing penalties that almost look intentional. The Kevin De Bruyne here, for example, well, James Maddison free kick.
Exactly. How do you work it out? At the end of the day, you know, it comes down to opinions as well as rules, doesn't it? You know, like say, I at first didn't think De Bruyne was a penalty, but I did on close reflection. But you're always going to get different opinions, aren't you? Even, you know, that's why, I don't know. Where do you break off the clear and obvious bit as well? You know, it's clear and obvious, might be clear and obvious to Jordan, but not to me, or vice versa. So... I don't know. There's always room for an argument. And at the end of the day, you're not going to get the perfect scenario. I don't think so. But it was that ruling, wasn't it, as much as anything? But it is... I personally... I'm coming around to the train of thought. I'd rather have it as it was. I thought it was going to be a good thing to start with. But like saying now... I can't remember. It was one of the players. Lab was talking... it was Gibbs White. A player in the Premier League was talking the other day. He said, I didn't celebrate because I thought it was going to get picked up by VAR. Thought something was going to happen. And that's becoming the norm now. And that is strange. That's a shame as well, isn't it? You know, it's getting to that extent that people are scoring and they're even in the back of their mind already, even if they're pretty sure nothing's happened, they can't guarantee it. It really does take the edge off the game.
I mean, that, for one thing, that's players thinking that in the press box. I mean, we think when Leicester scored, inherently we are fans obviously covering Leicester, but we do want them to do well. But you think when that goal goes in, you immediately think, oh, just in case, do I not celebrate? That's from a journalist's point of view, that's from a player's point of view. The fans that have paid all that money to go to Norwich, if they're thinking that, they can't have that moment of euphoria that football fans usually have.
Yeah, I think that's the... that's the biggest argument for doing away with VAR. I think it's... I think, although the times... At times, it's They've taken too long to come to decisions. I think most of the time the decisions have been correct. I think obviously there's been a lot of frustrating kind of minimal decisions where there's been, you know, offsides by inches and like you say, the sort of unintentional handballs. But I think it's the, if there's the, yeah, the biggest argument against it is that it's taking the emotion out of the game for everybody involved. And really that's what the game runs on. That's what makes it, certainly in my opinion, the best sport in the world. That, and you need those kind of emotions in it, you know, to make the game as it is. I think a lot of managers and players have mentioned the idea of a game being run by robots, which is not what people want. Certainly not to fans who pay money to go to games.
I think one thing that you do have to say as well, Matt, is you look at it across the course of the season, everyone talks about things evening out. Leicester have been on the good end of VAR decisions as well as the bad end of VAR decisions. So it's happening now.
Yeah, but does it even itself out? I don't know. It's just, you know, you might be really unlucky. You might have 10 situations that go against you and only 1-4. You know, I don't know. Where's the stats that back that up? Or that one time it goes against you, you know, might
could
be
cost you more than what it
exactly.
Does, yeah.
It might cost you, well, a minimum 2 points, or you know, might cost you the game,
or a semi-final of a
or
cup
a semi-final exactly, more than just losing a mid-table inconsequential game at the latter stage of the season. So, you know, you can't use that for any sort of reasoning, but it's gone too far, isn't it? Without a doubt,
it is clearly frustrating. But it's here. It's here to stay. It's, I guess, from an ex-player point of view, it's from the current players that are on the pitch when an incident happens. We've talked about it this season, for example, in the Tottenham game when Leicester had the Tottenham goal disallowed here. Leicester went on to win the game from behind.
Yeah,
it's about
Leicester
reacting to it, and yeah, that's exactly what happened with Norwich though the other night. They were down, they were behind, they were thinking, oh God, it's a long way back. But it was actually 0-0, and then suddenly the crowd were up and they were on the front foot.
Yeah, yeah, that does come into it, but it's something you've got to deal with. Players will be prepped for that. You know, I'm sure every club has spoken about that because you've seen the change in mental tide on a few occasions, haven't you? I get that, but again, what do you do about it? You know, you've got to be strong and react to that yourself. It is a little bit of a massive reprieve, isn't it, for the defending team. They're down 1 second, they think, oh, it's going to be hard work getting back against these lot. They don't concede many goals, and all of a sudden you're back on even keel, and you have that knockback of disappointment. But, you know, you could turn it round as a manager, so you've got to be positive and go, OK, boys, be doubly determined to go and get that winner, because you deserve one. You haven't got it. You go and get what you do, you know, is justly yours. So it's probably easier said than done. But, again, if I was a manager, I wouldn't be, you know, or a player again, I wouldn't be using that as a reason why we weren't able to go and play as well as we'd like to, which was the case for Leicester on Friday. You know, just because they've had that disappointment, you've got to be stronger mentally.
Right, let's put Friday behind us then and finish with the
good league. Finish, though, by the way.
It was a great finish, in fairness, to the Norwich player, Lewis. But look at the table,
no,
Leicester.
No, sorry, I mean Kelechi.
Oh, goal. That one. Well, sorry, they were both great finishes.
Yeah,
they were great finishes, weren't they? Leicester 8 points clear of fifth place Manchester United with 10 games of the Premier League to go. It's a different competition, though, Jordan, on Wednesday, of course. That was why you were here for Brendan Rodgers's pre-match press conference ahead of the game with Birmingham City. What did you make of what he said about the Birmingham game?
Well, I think it's clear he's not taking it lightly, which I think is clearly the right thing to do given Birmingham's run of form. I think they're 13 unbeaten in all competitions, which goes back to New Year's Day. So there's clearly a resilience about them. You know, despite a sort of first half of the season, they were struggling a little bit in the Championship. Yeah, I think it's clear that it's a game that I think you would look at it on paper and say Leicester at home to a team in the bottom half of the Championship. You know, that's a home banker, but that's the thing, you can't think that way if you want to get through to the next round. And obviously, it's such a an excellent opportunity for Leicester to get through to the quarterfinals.
And to make the quarterfinals, as you say, how exciting is that from a Leicester fan point of view? Because obviously it's a competition that Leicester have a lot of history in. Not necessarily all good history either, but this is a really good chance now to make the quarterfinals, and then you never know with what might happen with a draw, then another win and you're at Wembley.
Yeah, I think there's a... With how good Leicester are, or they can be, and with the quality they have in depth in the squad, I think there's never really been a better time for them to go all out for the FA Cup. And obviously it is something that the fans really want to see, because it's, you know, Leicester have that record of most finals without ever winning it. You know, they've not even been to a semi-final since, I want to say, 82, 83, something like that. So, you know, for a lot of fans, they've never seen their team play an FA Cup semi-final and have that chance to get to a final. So, yes, I think it's a huge deal. I think it's a bigger deal for Leicester than it is for a lot of other clubs. And hopefully that will come out on the pitch and in the stands, and Leicester will keep progressing and we'll be at Wembley.
Hopefully so. One man that was very happy with that draw was Damari Gray. Leicester forward spent 9 years at the Blues, and he was asked what his reaction was when he saw the draw.
Yeah, I was buzzing because it was them or Coventry. So obviously Madders wanted Coventry and I wanted Birmingham. I wanted it to be away as well, because I do want to go back there, because I haven't been back there since. But either way, yeah, I'm just I'm looking forward to it.
Do you have many connections still with the club?
Yeah, I think because that's where I grew up playing, and I come through there, and I still live 10 minutes from the training ground, so it's one of them places if I wanted to just pop in, you know, I'd see the same faces from before, and obviously there's been a lot of changes there, but you know, they'd always make me feel welcome, and I can just, you know, pop in if I want to see some more friends and stuff.
From a Leicester point of view, obviously it's a chance to reach the quarterfinals of a major competition. Yeah. How exciting is that?
Yeah, it's very exciting. I think that's one of our targets and something, you know, we're taking serious. Obviously we fell short in the semis in the Carabao Cup, but you know, we've got another opportunity to you know, get to another final again, hopefully.
Damari Gray there, Matt, obviously happy to draw his old club, Birmingham. He said there was a bit of a thing with both him and James Maddison, because obviously Coventry could have been the other team, so they were both hoping for their respective old clubs to get through for this round. But it's Damari Gray's Birmingham. So how do you think he and Leicester will be approaching the game Wednesday?
Well, he'll be hoping to get some game time, won't he, Damari? He hasn't featured really for a little while. His sort of season's dropped off over recent times, in the squad on Friday. He'd be hoping to get a start and make an impact against his old team, wouldn't it? Yeah, but every chance, isn't it? I mean, it's a good tie. There are concerns playing against Birmingham. It's a more difficult tie now than it was when the balls came out of the hat, that's for sure, because of the run that Jordan mentioned there, and the reverse with Leicester, really. You know, they've been off their levels, if you like. So it's going to be a big old game. It'll be a tough game. And I imagine, you know, they're going to bring a lot of supporters, won't they? You know, localish, travelling entourage, and it's going to be pretty lively, I think, on Wednesday night, isn't there? There's a little bit of a rivalry there, if you like. Not that they played each other much over recent time, but just the East-West Midlands bit. Both supporters are quite vociferous, aren't they? Certainly, if they're travelling away, fans will be. And, he's got to make it to a good cup tie.
What do you think is behind Leicester not doing as well in the FA Cup, certainly recently, as they have done in the League Cup? I mean, your team in the 90s, as we'll touch upon later, obviously had such great form in the League Cup when it came to the FA Cup. Mm. Less so. Why was that?
Good question. Don't really know. I suppose to an extent, you look at it and say, well, some teams don't put out as strong a team in the League Cup as they might do in the FA Cup, but I don't think that's necessarily the case these days. You know, squad rotation is applicable in both competitions, isn't it? But I don't know. I don't think there's any particular reason. I think it's just the way it's developed. You know, if we didn't consider ourselves League Cup specialists when we got the 3 out of 4 finals, it's just the way it went, really. I mean, we played decent opposition, and rotation was less of an issue back then as well. So I don't know. I don't know what it is, really. Long overdue, though, isn't it? And, you know, a decent run. It'd be lovely to get into the quarters and as Jordan says, the semis at the very least.
Well, it was only a couple of seasons ago, wasn't it? It was Chelsea here at King Power Stadium. Was that the 2017-18 season where they met them in the quarters? It went to extra time, of course, didn't it? That they were awfully close there to getting through to the semi-finals again. And that was obviously against a very good Chelsea side back then. And you look at the draw, if you can get into the quarterfinals, if it's favourable, obviously that Wembley trip looks even closer.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is on the draw you get. I think, because other than last season, I don't seem to remember, and the Wickham game, sort of 20 or so years ago.
Yeah, you need to whisper that way, Matt. Sorry, Matt.
I don't seem to remember too many...
Wait a minute to rear its ugly head.
I don't seem to remember too many times that Leicester have been the sort of the victims of a giant killing, other than those two. So yeah, I think it has been, generally it's been a case where Leicester have played teams that would have been expected to win, or they've played teams kind of, you know, that have kind of been a similar level of ability, and they've ended up going out. So I think it's, you know, when it gets to those sorts of games, it's fine margins. But as I said earlier, Leicester are now one of the best teams left in the competition. So they should be feeling confident that they should at least, they can at least get to the last four, I would say.
And they've already shown that they've beaten Wigan Athletic already at King Power Stadium. That I know that Wigan could have had a goal back in that game, but it was a relatively comfortable 2-0 win. They'll be hoping for the same again. And do you think they'll look back at that game with Wigan and say a similar performance, a similar professional performance?
Well, I think they'll be hoping for a better performance, to be honest. They, you know, they were okay. They did the job, but it wasn't particularly pretty, was it? A similar story against Brentford, although in the League Cup, they've been emphatic winners, haven't they, you know, against lesser opposition. They've dictated play from pretty much start to finish and, you know, seen off some good sides, albeit in lower divisions, pretty swiftly. But I do fancy, despite the sequence of events of late, you know, for both sides, I still fancy Leicester. You know, they have got that extra class. But Birmingham will make a fist of it, that's for sure.
Judging from what Jordan was saying as well about Brendan Rodgers, they're clearly taking it seriously. We heard again from Damari Gray. You can see that full interview on the website. But he talks about targets at the beginning of the season and wanting to do well in cup competitions. Yeah. So clearly there is a desire and a want to go far in these competitions.
Well, I think that's a good thing, yeah. I think, you know, it encourages, hopefully develops a winning mentality within the club, whatever competition they're in. And yeah, you start the season, this season, Leicester have only got three things to play for, three competitions to win. That's where we used to look at, and we used to look at it as a two, really. We knew we weren't going to win the Premier League, or highly unlikely, and as it proved. And even for this team, despite their early league positions, you know, winning the league was always going to be out of reach, I think, by most people's opinion, and it's proved to be the case. So you've only got two competitions you really go for. And a qualification for Europe is obviously the main concern, and doing well in the Premier League. But give it your best shot, you know, within a controlled way. And I think Wednesday night, there's bound to be a few changes from Friday. But if Wednesday wasn't being played, there'd probably been a few changes between Friday and Monday with the Villa game anyway. So, you know, there's a little of an incentive there for the players coming in, because they're going to have an opportunity to get themselves in the Premier League starting lineup as well.
How much do you think that will help players as well that come in, that maybe the likes of Damari Gray might come in? If he plays really well against Birmingham, he can then be banging on the manager's door saying, I want to play on Monday against Aston Villa in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think I think players need some game time, and I think they need to impress in those games. But I think there's also a case of not wanting to put too much pressure on players. I think certainly it's been the case with Gray, where maybe he's been given the odd start and he's thought, OK, I really need to play well in this game, otherwise I'm back on the bench or something like that. But I think if there's less pressure around it, if he is starting, then he can kind of relax into a game and play his more natural game without thinking, I need to play well to keep my place in the side. But I think, on the whole, I think Rodgers has done a very good job in terms of keeping the whole squad feel like they're, you know, they're part of the first team, which I think is why Leicester have done so well when they have changed teams. I think Matt mentioned it earlier with the League Cup games earlier in the season against the likes of Luton and Burton. Leicester made changes and they played really well, and it kind of looked fairly natural. It was still flowing football despite the number of changes. Then we had the games in January against Wigan and Brentford, where Leicester did professional jobs in both. So I think they have done a very good job in terms of the coaching staff and keeping those players feel like they're part of the squad, which keeps them confident. So when they do come into the team, they kind of hit the ground running.
I'll take your point there with the confidence issues, if you want, but people like Damari Gray and others, when you get that's part and parcel of being a footballer, though. He's dealing with that. And you've got to step up to the plate at some stage. And, Damari Gray, I know you've got to treat players individually on their character, et cetera, et cetera. But, he's had numerous opportunities. Sooner or later, he's got to make something count, make it stick. You've got to step up, and make yourself a permanent fixture.
Yeah, you just don't want him to try too hard, is what I was saying.
I understand what you're saying. But, even if he is put in that position, there might be a position where Brendan Rodgers, he might not have stated publicly, but he goes, well, if he don't do well this time, then I'm going to lose confidence in him. It works both ways as well. You've got to prove yourself, haven't you?
Right. Stephen on Facebook says we can win and win well. Graham says we need to win for our confidence and then let's beat Villa on Monday for a bit of revenge. Can we get, before we break, let's get your score predictions for Wednesday, please.
2-1. Leicester win.
Oh, I'll be different then. I'll go 2-0 to Leicester.
2-1 and 2-0, yes. Hopefully a relatively comfortable evening. You can, of course, listen to every single minute of the game on LCFC Radio on Wednesday evening. Still to come, though, here on Extra Time on LCFC Radio, we'll have a look at what else happened elsewhere in the Premier League. We'll also head to our commentary team in Southampton because the development squad are playing this evening. We'll hear from their top scorer, George Hurst, as well.
Live on LCFC.com, Facebook and Twitter. You're listening to Extra Time on LCFC Radio.
Welcome back to Extra Time here on LCFC Radio with me, Dan Bates. We've got Leicester Mercury's Jordan Blackwell in the studio with us this evening, as well as former Leicester club captain Matt Elliott. We will, however, though, go to Southampton because the development squad are in action tonight. Our commentator this evening is Chris Parrott. Good evening, Chris.
Evening, Dan. Definitely a night to be in a nice, warm studio. I can assure you of that. But, it should be a good game. Sat watching the Leicester players warm up as we speak. And the task has just got a bit harder because the Southampton team news has just dropped. Oriol Romeu is captaining the Saints tonight and Shea Adams is starting up front.
Blimey. So two, obviously, first-team players in there for Southampton. Any team news you've got there for Leicester this evening?
Yeah, just the one change from Leicester's last game, which was a thrilling win against Tottenham, which people may well have seen the highlights or watched the coverage of. And the one change is that Ali Regba returns in the front three in place of Darnell Johnson. But aside from that, it's the same 11. So Matty James, in terms of first-team experience, is playing tonight. And, of course, George Hurst leads the line, man in form, 8 goals in 13 league games for the club, which is incredibly impressive for this stage of the season.
Well, last little bit then, Chris. Everyone that's listening in can watch that game straight after us. Give us a reason why they should stay with us and watch the game on LCFC TV, Chris.
Well, first of all, we've got James Scowcroft alongside myself, former Leicester striker, of course, and that is one reason. The other is that we're into the final 5 games of the season, Dan, and Leicester are banging the title race, 3 points behind Chelsea, who also play tonight, so we'll keep you updated with what's happening in that game, because if Chelsea were to lose and Leicester were to win, they'd go joint top of the table with just 4 matches left. Also, given, I think, the Southampton team news, to see how the young Foxes go against someone of Shea Adams' quality and Oriol Romeu's quality, most definitely a reason to watch. And let's hope they can continue what has been a terrific campaign.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Chris. We'll join you again at 7:15 on LCFC TV. You can watch that game with Southampton. No, we don't need to give any more reasons, do we, Matt? Because Chris just listed them all there of why people should tune in.
Oh, just James Scowcroft is enough. Just listen to his dulcet tones. Sco's doing well. He's looked after me a couple of times as well, filled in for me, done me a favour, saved me a journey. But, yeah, no, they're going well, aren't they? Going well. Beegs and Ben doing a, and Chris Tucker doing a great job with the youngsters there. And interesting for the lads to play against players like that, Romeo and Adams. But they used to be an every-week occurrence, though, in the reserves. You know, it used to be fully-fledged professionals, experienced professionals that you're coming up against. So, but, again, the clue's in the name. That will help their development, wouldn't it, coming up against such players and, you know, and competing at that level and also competing, trying to win something as well, you know, trying to gain that title against Chelsea, give them the competitive edge as well.
That, how much do you think that will help with the development, that they are part now of a title race in PLT?
Well, I think it's challenging and, you know, a positive thing to have something to motivate you, and, you know, not just your own personal development motivation, but, you know, playing in a team environment that needs to learn how to win games and hopefully competitions as well, yeah. You know, it's not just academy football that's, I wouldn't say not resultless, you know. It's got much more effect whether you win or lose, you know, but you're going for a title, and even if it doesn't get widely publicly acknowledged, as a group of players, it's nice to test yourself and, you know, go and face that challenge. And if you're successful, you get huge reward out of it. And that, even subconsciously, it develops you for similar situations, hopefully, down the line.
Yep, Southampton against the Leicester City development squad live on lcfc.com/TV immediately after we're done this evening on LCFC Radio. Right, Chris gave you a little bit of a clue during his little bit, so I hope you were listening.
I'm always
for the first weekend trivia of the evening. You thought you got away with it. No weekend trivias.
No, I was waiting for it to start.
Yeah. You against journalist Jordan Blackwell. I remember last time
Jordan took a
clean sweep.
Yeah,
last
exactly.
Time. So the first question.
The only journalist is Jordan's predecessor that I have any joy against, Rob Tanner. how he's muffled his way through his career, I'll never know.
I'll tell you what, I think he's on next week, so he can have his right to reply next week to you.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, George Hurst starts for the Young Foxes this evening, as we've just been hearing. He's a development squad top scorer this season. But how many does he have in all competitions? So if you write down your answer.
Down.
Yeah. So Chris gave a little bit of a clue during his link there.
There's only a partial clue.
Mm.
That was only in the last... Well, I'm not saying nothing.
No, yeah.
Right.
Go on then.
Hang on. How many games have they played?
Not telling you that.
Oh. Okay.
Go on, what's your guess then?
15.
15.
I've gone for 11.
11.
I think you're close.
Jordan's closer, yeah. It's 12. Yep, so Jordan takes...
You're 8 in the last 13, he said, didn't he?
Yeah. So that's good scoring record at the moment. But it is his first season with the Young Foxes.
And 12 in how many?
I'll tell you in a minute. I'll tell you what. We'll hear
the cup as well.
We'll hear from George Hurst right now. He says he's had a fantastic debut season with the Young Foxes.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be going much better, really. You know, to come in my first season here and to be scoring goals and stuff like that, it's brilliant. You know, to be helping the team win games at the end of the day. You know, that's why I came to the club. So hopefully, if I can carry on from now to the end of the season, hopefully, like I say, push on to get that first place in the league and win the title, then brilliant.
Yeah, final word then on George Hurst. We just heard from him there. Obviously, he's happy with his first season in Leicester City colours, and being top scorer and scoring goals as a striker is so important, isn't it?
Oh, of course, yeah. He's a little bit of a semi-throwback, isn't he, in his style of play. Big, hustling, bustling target man who's got an eye for goal. Yeah, he puts himself in there, you know, where it counts, and works really hard. Attributes that his father used to have. Who's sitting down at the Holmes Park on a couple of occasions. He's got potential there. He's got potential, still relatively young, isn't he? He gives something different. And at times, the first thing could do with someone a little bit like him, you know, just a bit of physicality. I think in certain periods in games, I know it's not Brendan Rodgers' natural approach, but I always think it's quite a nice weapon to have. at certain times. But anyway, yeah, but yeah, hopefully he'll. I'm sure it won't be what a lack of hard work that stops him having a good career.
No, best of luck to George Hurst and the Young Foxes tonight. They'll be without one man though, Kieran Drewsby Hall. Obviously, he's on loan.
Scoring goals, isn't he?
Well, don't know. Is it worth not saying that? This is one of the questions.
Oh, right, okay.
Take that back quickly, yeah. Kieran Drewsby Hall, of course, on loan at Blackpool. He scored at the weekend in their 2-1 win over Ipswich, but how many goals has he got for the Seasiders since he joined them on loan in January?
You'll know this, won't you?
You'll both know this, won't you, I'm sure.
I think I know.
Three, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well done. You both get a point for that one there. So well done to Kieran Drewsby Hall, who's got a new manager as well, which was announced
today. Oh, yeah, who is
today.
The manager?
Neil Critchley. Was the under-23s manager for Liverpool this season.
Yeah, that's what... Oh, what, the fella...
The mastermind of the win over
them?
Shrewsbury.
Yeah. I never picked the name up. So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Which
is an interesting one.
Different.
But it was Neil Critchley's old first team that probably brought the biggest shock result of the weekend, of course. Watford 3, Liverpool 0, Jordan, on Saturday evening.
Yeah, it was... I'm not sure anybody really saw that coming. But it was a terrific game to watch, and they thoroughly deserved it. There was no hint of any kind of good fortune about it. They defended brilliantly. They were lightning on the counter attack. And it was a fully deserved win that I think the title is obviously still going to go to Liverpool. But I think for the rest of the league, I think there were a lot of happy fans to see. Just to see a bit of an upset.
Obviously, Matt, it ends Liverpool's hopes of that unbeaten Premier League season, which means only Arsenal have done that. You played against that team and against the previous Arsenal teams as well. So how good of an achievement was that then from Arsenal, and the fact that we've seen Liverpool obviously losing yesterday, how good does it underline the achievement that they made?
Well, it speaks for itself, doesn't it? You know, enough has been said about it. I think... some people detract from it without being overcritical, saying I believe there was 12 draws out of those, was it 38 games? It was still 38 then, wasn't it? The Premier League's always been 38, hasn't it? But at the end of the day, unbeaten's unbeaten. By a hook or by a crook. And, it is a magnificent achievement, really. I think... because the more the season goes on, the more emphasis there is on that unbeaten tag, and teams are perhaps a little bit more desperate, and you can maybe clam up a bit and start thinking about not losing, maybe, rather than playing your natural game. But top quality side, weren't they? But some achievement, to go all the way through. I'm not really that bothered about comparisons, etc., but a lot of people are these days. You look at that team and people would be saying, are Man United the best ever, or that Chelsea team, or Man City two seasons ago, or is it this Liverpool team who probably, quite likely will end up with the highest points tally. Although, I don't know, would you like Invincibles, but who get 85 points, or Man City who get 101 points, was it?
100 exactly.
100 points exactly, was it? What's the better achievement there? So, different ways to look at it, but some fine sides throughout the years of the competition, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was a surprise result on Saturday. Leicester fans will have been looking at the early games, the Wolves-Tottenham one and the Everton-Man U one with keen eyes, obviously, in that race for fourth. Everton 1, Man U 1, though, is a subject for our third weekend trivia of the evening. Since Carlo Ancelotti's appointment, or his first game in charge on Boxing Day, Dominic Calvert-Lewin has scored more Premier League goals than anybody else. How many has he got in that time frame?
When was he appointed?
Well, his first game in charge was Boxing Day.
Yeah.
So it's 10 games. How many goals has he got? More than anyone else. Write your answer down this time.
Well, I'll go first then, if Jordan's writing.
Go on then.
I think it's too many. I'm going to go 7.
I've gone 8.
Oh.
And Jordan's correct.
I was going to go 8.
I could see you about to say 8.
No, I was going to go 8 and I thought that was too high. So I went down to 7. What chance have I got against him? Bang on every time.
Yeah, another goal yesterday for Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Well, he's one off with George Hurst, weren't you? Yeah.
Yeah. it wasn't necessarily a typical striker's finish, was it, the Calvert-Lewin one? But he had to be there, and he put De Gea under pressure, and yeah, there was an element of luck in it, but he had to be there, he had to close him down, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I think we say it about strikers when they, you know, they've got to take shots to score, but also they've got to, you know, you're not going to get a goal if you don't close down the keeper, and we've seen it here with Leicester. I think, was it Chris Wood away at Watford, probably about 5 or 6 years
hits
ago?
His face, yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, and if you do close the goalkeeper down, you know, maybe 1 out of 100 times, you are gonna block the keeper's kick out. So it's worth doing, and it's paid off for him. So yeah, he's been very impressive, and I think he's probably thinking he might be able to push into that England squad, particularly with the amount of injuries there. But certainly, it's always good to see an English striker in form, as long as they're not scoring against Leicester.
And if you're an English striker and you want to score goals, do it just before a major tournament. Right, let's do our around the leagues because we're getting towards the end of the show, and one of your former teammates features in this.
Okay.
Around the leagues on Extra Time.
Real Madrid returned to the top of La Liga after beating Barcelona in El Clasico last night. Second half goals from Vinicius and Mariano were enough for Madrid to leapfrog their rivals and go a point clear at the top. It was the first games in the new MLS season at the weekend. Notably, David Beckham-owned new side Inter Miami lost 1-0 on their league bow. And more importantly, from our point of view anyway, 59,000 fans watched Nashville's MLS debut. Why is this important to us, Matt? Because of Steve Guppy, of course. He's their assistant manager. Unfortunately, though, they lost 2-1.
Oh, did they?
But it was to Atalanta United, one of the strongest teams in the league. So not a bad start, I guess, performance-wise there.
I saw a little clip of it on social media, doing the old national anthem and everything, weren't they? And proper going to town on it.
Yeah, but a 2-1 defeat, unfortunately, for his side. And finally, Lazio extended their unbeaten Serie A run to 21 games. With a 2-0 win over Bologna, which sees them move to the top of the league, despite playing a game more than Juventus, who sit second, 2 points behind them. The new documentary for the League Cup is, of course, out. That's a nice link from Steve Guppy into that, because there's a great little shot, isn't there, of Steve Guppy out in Florida.
Interesting angle. And his nice, what are they, like almost knee-length black socks that he's wearing. He looks a little bit suspect, doesn't he? Bless him. But glad to see he's doing well. They're quite good mates with, well, very good mates with Cups. And, when he is living over this way, because he keeps hopping over the Atlantic Ocean in different guises over there in America. But, over there in Nashville, a new franchise in the MLS. And I didn't realise it was that big a club. But like you say, was it 59,000?
59,000, yeah.
Yeah, he's got some job on his hands, hasn't he? Not off to a flying start, but back to the documentary. There, yeah, Cup's involved, as were most of the other lads from that squad. And expertly put together by the media team here. And in particular, we've got to mention Sam Chambers, have we?
He'll be delighted with that. Boss Hogg
likes to get a mention, doesn't he? But and all the other boys that have put the effort in, yeah, because I know there was a lot of work behind the scenes that went into... Was it just over an hour's documentary, isn't it? But it's expertly done, comes together really well. Yeah, just reflecting on our success back in the 2000. And what I did like about it, I mentioned it on Saturday, was all the lads, you know, giving their little bit of input. But it sort of reflected. One, it was like memories of good times and that. But you know, everyone enjoyed that era at the club, whether it was player, supporter, or staff, whatever, or just people working at the club. But that feeling of sort of, you have a little smile when you look back, and it was like the spirit of not just the squad, but the atmosphere around the club at the time. And it was, you know, it was a really enjoyable time to be part of the club, and that just capped it off. And you know, and also the team spirit that we had as a bond of players, I think that shone through from the little tales that were regaled. And it was, Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. Nice viewing. I haven't seen all of it in its entirety, but...
You've just fast-forwarded the bits you're in, that's
yeah, all. Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't realise Jerry Taggart wasn't in it, because I didn't see his bits at all. But no, I just skipped a few little bits, because I didn't have just over an hour to sit down and watch it properly, but I'll do that probably tonight.
Yeah, it's a fantastic watch. I mean, even if you're not a Leicester fan, it is a great watch as well. I'm not sure there's too many non-Leicester fans listening into Extra Time on LCFC Radio, though. We'll do our last Fox standing, which is what we always do here at the end of the show.
Yeah.
After his imperious run in the weekend trivia, Jordan Blackwell goes into Last Fox Standing as red-hot favourite. If you've not listened to Last Fox Standing before, I'm just trying to put that bit of pressure on him, Matt, just to put him off.
Yeah, we talk about individual pressures. Let's see how he reacts to it.
If you've not listened to us before or do Last Fox Standing, basically we've just been given a theme. I don't know what it is either. I'll read it out and we each have to take it in turns to do an answer on that theme. If we get it wrong or repeat one, we are out. Right, let's do it then, Matt. There were 45 different goal scorers in England's top two divisions over the weekend. We need to name them. So 45 goal scorers in England's top two divisions, Premier League and the Champions League. We need to name them. If you could wait for the dings and the crosses, whether you are right or wrong, that would be great. And Jordan, if you would like to start for us, please.
I will go for Jamal Lewis.
I will say Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Oh.
Hernandez.
Oh, sorry, it's back to me.
Yes. Yeah.
Raul Jimenez.
I'll say Bergwijn.
Jota.
Matt Doherty.
We appear to be going from game to game here, so I'll say Serge Aurier.
Oh, come on. A bit more games.
You're Hogan. Struggling already, yeah?
Jared Bowen.
Oh.
Sebastian Allaire.
I don't remember who scored for Southampton. What's his name? Hugill.
Dropping the divisions there.
Ismail Assar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Troy Deeney.
Ah, yeah.
I had to get on before you were going
to.
You're not struggling,
are you? I am, mate. I didn't go through many goal scorers yet. I'm not going to stick with you two anyway, am I? If I'm struggling now. You got a whole list there. I can't remember who scored for Southampton. It's four for Leeds.
Yeah, you said one of them there.
Oh, yeah.
Come
I'm
on,
struggling,
Matt.
Mate.
Come on.
I am.
5 seconds.
Hogan got two. Can I mention him again?
Well, that's you gone then.
Did you say Hernandez earlier?
Yeah.
So can I go Bruno Fernandez?
Yeah, correct.
Fernandez,
so I'll then say.
Do you know what? That's who I meant. But he's got the lead.
He's got the lead, exactly. So you got away with that.
I was getting mixed up, Fernandez.
Tyler Roberts.
Jordan Ayew.
Oh, that's the other Premier League.
Mikel Antonio.
Who's got Southampton?
Yeah, I think that's the only Premier League goal left, I think. And I can't remember who it was.
I've got it, Jordan, just to put you under that little extra bit of pressure.
Okay.
Might have to go Championship, mate.
Yeah,
Hogan.
Did he get three, did he, in the end? Gonna have to hurry you a little bit, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Basic.
I will say.
We've got the under 23s to follow us after this.
I will say. Bamford?
No. No, he didn't score.
Obafemi was the one you were looking for for Southampton. So that's a win for me this evening. Marcos Alonso,
Chelsea
King, Jefferson Lerma all scored in the Premier League. That was the Premier League ones done.
Have we forgotten that? Chelsea one.
Just completely forgot that game.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's one of those that if one of us had said one of the Chelsea players, the others would have got the Bournemouth goal scorers.
True.
But anyway, we've got a couple of minutes left before we have to go to the development squad game this evening. It was also...
Was that game expected to last longer then?
I thought that lasted longer than what we normally
do. Oh, right. Yeah, I was going to say,
Of ones. Talking about the League Cup documentary, it was Martin O'Neill's 68th birthday this week. Celebrated that, which for you, Jordan, growing up as a Leicester fan around that era, he must be one of your Leicester heroes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was my my first sort of games and first following Leicester was under O'Neill. You mentioned Guppy earlier, actually. He was my sort of first favourite player. Sorry, Matt.
I was just going to say, did you not have my shirt on the wall? Cups, was it?
He's only saying that because you're sat there.
I can say that, why Cups.
So, yeah, that kind of, you know, it's such a, you know, it's very helpful to, you know, if you start supporting a club and they're sort of immediately successful. So that was, that was a very good time to be following Leicester as a youngster.
And now you're following them as a journalist and hopefully equally as successful times. Let's hope that starts on Wednesday, of course, with that game against Birmingham in the FA Cup. As I said earlier, you can listen to the whole game on LCFC Radio. Matt, you'll be here, of course.
I will
indeed. Under the guise of LCFC Radio and Matchday Live, so we'll see you then. Matchday minus two is on Friday on LCFC TV. But before all of that, you can watch the under-23s there in action this evening. So do stay on lcfc.com, just hit /TV and you can watch them. But thank you very much to our two guests, Matt Elliott and Jordan Blackwell, this evening. Despite the result on Friday, we had a good time this evening, I'm sure.